All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons, and I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is a mock draft and mailbag Monday where I will be looking at some draft picks from the first two rounds from a recent mock draft from the Draft Network, as well as answering your listener questions.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years. I'm on Twitter at FalcFans and the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today is a mock draft Monday, a mailbag Monday, where I will be looking at a recent mock draft from thedraftnetwork.com. This one from Ben Solak, published on February 17th. And I will be looking at sort of his projection of the Falcons' first round pick as well as their second round picks, because it's a two round mock that Ben did, as well as looking a little bit at the picks projected for the various NFC South teams in the first round. Because, look, I mean, how many times can you talk about Kalaevon Chaisson? Oops, spoiler alert, you know, on this podcast. But we'll get a different angle on Kalaevon Chaisson and his potential pick on today's lead story. And then we'll get into some conversations about sort of how much the Falcons will value the running back position based off of some listener questions. We'll get into some ways of how a strategy of how the Falcons can sort of handle their tight cap situation in order to maximize their ability to address holes in free agency. And we'll get into a conversation about, you know, who have the worst contracts on the team and how the Falcons can get out of those contracts on today's episode. So, definitely a salary cap and draft and free agency centric episode, but it's the offseason. These are the topics that we will continue to discuss throughout the coming weeks and months. So without further ado, let's get into that Locked On Falcons lead story. So looking at Ben Solak's February 17th two-round mock draft posted at thedraftnetwork.com, he has the Atlanta Falcons addressing their need for an edge rusher in the first round at pick 16 overall by selecting LSU pass rusher Kalaevon Chaisson. It makes a lot of sense for the Falcons to target a speed rusher like Chaisson, particularly given how they may wind up approaching their strategy in terms of addressing that pass rush in free agency. Certainly the Falcons could try to make some splash signings, like going after someone like a Dante Fowler or Yannick Ngakoue, assuming he's not tagged, or Robert Quinn, but those guys aren't going to be cheap. Fowler and Quinn are coming off prove-it deals that they were paid $12 and $8 million respectively this past year. And the whole point of a prove-it deal is you play off of that contract and then you get paid a lot more money on the next contract. We saw that with the Falcons way back in 2017 when they signed Dontari Poe to a one-year $8 million contract. And then the following offseason from the Carolina Panthers, he wound up signing a three-year deal worth $9 million a year and had $13 million in guaranteed money. And then when you look at the price of recent edges from last offseason, you know, the market price for these high value edges like Fowler and Ngakoue and Quinn may be approaching $15, $16 million a year or more, with upwards of $30, $40, and maybe even $50 million guaranteed. That's a significant commitment to a free agent. And you compare that with what the Falcons could wind up paying someone like a Chaisson if they draft him based off of last year's number 16 overall pick, Brian Burns' contract. You're looking at a contract that averages about $3.4 million a year. So that's a significantly cheaper than $16 million a year. When you couple that possibility with a more quote unquote buckshot strategy of approach with the Falcons in free agency, where they can look to fill multiple holes on their defensive line. You may recall that back in 2017, the Falcons had their best pass rush of the Dan Quinn era when they had Dontari Poe, Adrian Claiborne, Grady Jarrett, Vic Beasley, Tack McKinley, and the incomparable Brooks Reed as their top six pass rushers. Those guys combined for 240 pressures in 2017, according to Pro Football Focus. Now you compare that to this year's top six pass rushers of Jarrett, Beasley, Claiborne, McKinley, Jack Crawford, and Alan Bailey, who only had 191 pressures. And with Beasley, Claiborne, and Crawford being free agents and Bailey a likely cap cut, 60% of that production is likely going to walk out the door this offseason. So the idea that the Falcons can go out there and sign one big splash pass rusher, it's going to resolve that issue and make up the difference, I think is being a little bit naive. And so what you're going to likely potentially see the from the Falcons in March is adding multiple players along the defensive front. We know Beasley's gone already. Claiborne certainly could come back. Crawford and Bailey could also return, but they didn't provide a lot of juice last year. So, you know, expecting them to do so in 2020 makes little sense. So you're looking at potentially adding at least three pass rushers this offseason, and Chaisson certainly could be one of them, but you still probably need two more. And maybe that doesn't necessarily mean spending a huge amount of money and rather going bargain shopping in free agency. And when you look at some of the bargain buys that the Falcons could potentially target, Michael Bennett, Kerry Hyder, Pernell McPhee, Jabal Sheard, Jihad Ward, guys like Ronald Blair, Marcus Golden, Shaq Lawson, you know, a lot of those guys are better at providing push up the middle. There are edges that have made a name for themselves being guys that can flip inside and play some D tackle in pass rushing situations, or guys that can play out there on the edge like a Lawson, but are more power players. And so one of the things that I think that has gotten little conversation this offseason is how do you meld together a cohesive pass rush unit? So I think regardless of who they sign, if Claiborne, Tack, and Jared are going to be that core, your core three up front, I think which prospect would complement their skill sets best is the best conversation to be having right now. And I don't know if you can come up with a better option right now than someone like Clavon Chaisson in round one, at least at this point. So we will get into more of Ben Solak's mock draft by looking at his projections for the Falcons in round two, as well as his projections for the various NFC South teams in round one as well, coming up on the podcast. But before we get there, I want to let you guys know that this episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. And we know that confidence is key to improving the pass rush, because you want guys that will go out there and get after the quarterback, that have that level of confidence that they can do the job. And you guys want to have the confidence to get after things in the bedroom. And all you got to do is check out BlueChew.com. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they'll work up to twice as fast as a pill. Blue Chew is prescribed online by licensed physicians, so you don't have to go to the doctor's office or wait in line at the pharmacy. And it ships right to your door in a discreet package. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, it's cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, take advantage of this special offer by visiting BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, and faster choice. So let's get into who Ben Solak had the Falcons selecting with their top pick in round two, and that was Georgia running back DeAndre Swift. But instead of having him go number 47 overall, Ben has the Falcons trading up to number 41 overall with the Cleveland Browns to take Swift. According to Ben's mock draft, Swift is the number two running back off the board after he has Ohio State's J.K. Dobbins going in round one to the Miami Dolphins at pick 26. Ben has the Falcons giving up pick 47 as well as their fourth round pick, sending that over to Cleveland and getting back Cleveland's sixth round pick in exchange to move up those six spots to get the running back of their choice. I haven't really gotten into the running backs this year because I'm kind of waiting to see what the Falcons do with Devontae Freeman. I've certainly watched many of the top guys, at least watched some of them this year, but I haven't watched enough of, say, the top five or six guys to really sort of have a strong preference. And I remember someone asking on an earlier Q&A, asking about sort of what I thought about Swift specifically. And my thoughts was like, hey, he's a good Georgia running back. There's a lot of those good Georgia running backs. He didn't necessarily stand out comparatively to guys like Gurley and Chubb and Sony Michel in my eyes. But, you know, who knows? He could wind up being the best out of that group for all I know. So that was my sort of initial thoughts on him. But we got another question sort of about DeAndre Swift, and it comes from One Flew Over the Falcons Nest at Mave2124 on Twitter. He asks, so if the Falcons cut Freeman, does that make Swift a possibility at 16? Why would that potentially be too high? Would getting a good Georgia running back make up for not drafting Gurley in 16? For the record, I think right now the team drafts a corner. So, Andy, first, I would say I haven't been that impressed with any of these running backs to think that they're going to get top 16 consideration. I don't think any of them really deserve to be first round picks if you're asking me, but generally I'm kind of against drafting running backs in the first round. Number two, I would say I don't think the Falcons particularly value running back that highly enough to consider taking one at 16. I won't say there's a 0% chance of that happening, but I think it's like a 1.4% chance that that happens. And if, you know, would it make up for not taking Gurley? I mean, I'm sure to some Georgia fans it might, but I'm sure there's other Georgia fans that are like, oh, well, you know, drafting DeAndre Swift won't give me back the 5 years. I was forced to watch Vic Beasley, so no, it doesn't make up for it. And yes, that's how exactly how you sound. So I don't know. Like, I don't think that's really a strong consideration. Like, it would take sort of a unique sort of circumstances in my eyes to see the Falcons pull the trigger on a running back with their number one pick, given the pretty much holes across this roster. I think it's more likely that we see that as a day two option. I just don't think the Falcons value the running back position like that. That they, to me, they would have to sort of look at that guy as like, oh, he's going to be the next Adrian Peterson. And I personally haven't seen that from any of these guys in this draft class, and nor do I think the Falcons are going to see that either. But again, I haven't done a deep dive on these running backs. Ben Solak's next pick for the Falcons at pick 55 was Raekwon Davis, the defensive lineman from Alabama. And Davis is an interesting player. I haven't watched him from 2019 yet. I did watch him in back, like he first came on my radar back in like 2017, 2018. And sort of at that time, he was like, oh, he's going to be the next star Alabama D lineman that's going to be a difference maker in the same mold that, you know, guys like Jerron Reed and Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne were. And I'm sure it goes back, Marcel Darius and those guys. And that seemed what, and apparently he didn't live up to those expectations. Again, I didn't really watch him this past year, but it was like at the time when he was on that radar, I was like, oh, he's a potential like top 10, top 15 pick because of those expectations. And he's like a really powerful player that he'll eventually develop and hone his skills to be a much more effective and much more consistent player the longer he's at Alabama. And again, I haven't watched him this past year, but based off of the hearsay I hear of him, he didn't necessarily really develop that. So based off of my assessment of Davis from a couple of years ago, as well as that hearsay from his lack of development, he kind of seems, you know, in the same vein as Rashid Hageman, sort of a guy with raw tools that you think may have his best football ahead of him, but hasn't necessarily lived up to that. And you have to wonder, why hasn't he lived up to that? Because we know in Alabama, they have pretty good coaching. So it's not as if like he was poorly coached in college or anything like that. Like you can argue maybe Hageman was. So that's an interesting conversation. But Davis is one of those guys that I will eventually get around to watching as we go further in the process. But obviously, if he doesn't test well, come combine time, I don't think he's necessarily going to be on the Falcons radar. So it may not be a priority, but we'll see how that goes. But let's move on and talk a little bit about Ben's pick for the rest of the NFC South. Again, there's only so much we could say about Kalyvon Chaisson, as I said at the top of the show. And so Ben had some interesting selections around the rest of the NFC South. He had both the Bucs and Panthers trading up for a quarterback. The Panthers made the boldest move in Ben's first round projection, trading up from number 7 to number 3 with the Detroit Lions to nab Tua Tagovailoa, the quarterback from Alabama. According to Ben, he has them giving up their first and second round pick this year, Carolina's first and fourth pick round picks next year, and also giving up their second round pick in 2022. All to move up 4 spots, and that tells you the premium that there is at the quarterback position. And I think it's interesting because you have a brand new regime here, you know, relatively new owner, new head coach. You got Joe Brady, you got, you know, Marty Herney still there as the GM, but I don't know how much power he's going to really have. And, you know, the reason why you ultimately went with Matt Rhule is because you want a culture change, which, you know, again, I'm sure there are plenty of people like, well, you know, was there really that much of an issue with Ron Rivera's culture? You know, certainly that's a debatable issue. But it seems like the Panthers are all set up for a, you know, basically a fresh start with a brand new era of Panthers football with new coach and potentially a new quarterback. So it wouldn't shock me if the Panthers traded up, but obviously they've sort of have to figure out what the future of Cam Newton is. And again, this is a pretty high premium to pay up. You got to be utterly convinced that someone like a Tua is your guy. And it'll be interesting to sort of see if the Panthers make that choice this offseason. I just don't know if free agency is going to solve that issue permanently. So to me, it's like you either go with Cam and draft a developmental guy, because I don't think Will Greer is that guy, or you go all in and try to get whoever you think is the best quarterback in this draft class. And, you know, again, I can't help but think, you know, there is a slim possibility that maybe they could make a play for Joe Burrow at number one, but they would probably have to give up a lot more than what they're giving up to Detroit here. So something to keep an eye on, something to plant that seed in the back of your head. But let's move on to the Bucs trade up. And Ben has them trading up for Jacob Eason, going from 14 to 12, and giving up their first and third round picks to move up two spots, I'm sorry, to find their quote unquote big armed replacement for Jameis Winston. I haven't watched Eason extensively from his days at Washington this past year. I have watched him kind of in proxy when I've been watching other prospects and then seeing games where Eason's really struggling. And so, like, that would be a weird pick to me, that if you're Tampa Bay and you're moving on from Jameis Winston, to me, you're kind of making a significant downgrade going with Jacob Eason. Like, I think Eason could get there one day, but he's not there right now. And so you're just going to, from a big, strong-armed, erratic quarterback to a lesser, big, strong-armed, and even more erratic quarterback. Because certainly Jameis, say what you want, he was definitely a much better prospect than to Jacob Eason coming out. So, you know, that would be a weird pick. But look, NFL teams are weird, so we'll see how that goes. You know, I wasn't a big fan of the Bills getting rid of Tyrod so that they could get Josh Allen, but it seemingly has not worked out in their favor. So we'll see what Josh Allen brings to the future. But let's round up the Saints pick with T. Higgins, though, Clemson wide receiver at pick 24. So he does not have the Saints trading up. I recently watched Higgins. You know, I'm going through all the, you know, I'm going through not all the wide receivers, but like I'm trying to watch like at least 30 wide receivers this year and 15 tight ends. And I've mostly worked myself from the bottom up with the wide receivers, getting prepared for the combine, and still got a couple of tight ends to go. But so I only really recently watched T. Higgins. I had seen him in passing watching Clemson over the years. The player that he reminded me of was Kenny Golladay, big wide out. And, you know, the Saints need another number two wide receiver. So I don't look at T. Higgins as a first round pick. He wouldn't be a first round on my board, but given sort of the Saints' other needs and sort of given that need to get a number two across from Michael Thomas, Higgins, I think, you know, wouldn't be a bad pick for them, just because you can certainly question Drew Brees' arm strength. But the value of a guy like Higgins is he's so big and he's so fast, you can just kind of throw it up and let him go get the football. And they kind of had that type of player before, back in the days when they had Robert Meacham, and he was sort of the number two to Marcus Colston, although calling him the number two, I'm sure Devery Henderson and Lance Moore are rolling around in their graves right now hearing me say that. But, you know, I think, you know, Higgins, you know, Meacham worked in New Orleans with Brees. Even if he wasn't a high volume player, he was an effective vertical threat for that offense. And I think Higgins could potentially be. So that would be certainly problematic and certainly would emphasize the Falcons needing to add another big corner, because we'll see about Isaiah Oliver. But having both Michael Thomas and T. Higgins on the field at the same time would be a difficult matchup for Oliver and Sheffield long term in my eyes, but we'll see how that goes. So we'll wrap up today's episode by getting into your listener questions that are sort of dealing with bad contracts and salary cap stuff coming up on today's podcast. But since it is a mock draft Monday, I got to plug the three draft related podcasts that you can find on the Locked On Podcast Network, as well as thedraftnetwork.com, where you guys can get into any number of mock drafts. Even though we talked about a mock draft from Ben Solak from February 17th, as you guys are listening to this on Monday, there is a brand new mock draft at the Draft Network right now that you can check out as well. But check out the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast, the Locked On College Football Podcast, and the Draft Dudes Podcast on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. All three are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So Corey Charon at Buffalo Head One asks, you often say the salary cap is a speed bump. With free agency and the draft coming, how would you manage them in the cap to get the roster to where you think it should be by starting day? So my answer to this question, Corey, is going to be less of sort of my wish list and more of what I think the Falcons will do but with a little bit more Aaron Freeman flavors inserted in it. Sorry for using the third person. I know a former co-host of mine that really hated me using the third person, and I always laugh every time I use it because I think about that. But anyway, so yeah, that I want to say that first and foremost, because this isn't necessarily like, this is exactly how I would do it. It's just more like, who cares how I would do it? You care about how the Falcons are going to do it, and I care about how the Falcons are going to do it, and we're going to judge them for it. That's what we're here to do. So it's basically what I kind of like, the foundation of what I think the Falcons will wind up doing, and then sort of me sort of tweaking it slightly. So if you go to overthecap.com, which is the best, you know, salary cap based website you can find on the interwebs for professional football, based off of their calculator, cutting Devontae Freeman, Alan Bailey, Ty Sambrello, James Carpenter, Luke Stocker, and Matt Schaub should get the Falcons up to roughly about $20 million in cap space from the current place. Now, I'm not convinced that I would cut Freeman. I think I would try to approach him first to restructure or take a pay cut with the goal of potentially saving $3.5 million that you would save from cutting him or more with that restructure or that pay cut rather than cutting him. Because I would love to see Freeman, as I've said before on the podcast, I would love to see Freeman sort of play the Frank Gore to whoever we wind up drafting, maybe a DeAndre Swift's, Devin Singletary, that sort of dynamic you saw in Buffalo this past year with the sort of the veteran guy easing the road for the young rookie or whatever the case may be. But if Freeman balked at taking that pay cut or restructuring, then certainly I'd probably send him his walking papers, but only after. Then I'd probably approach guys like Alex Mack and Jake Matthews and Deion Jones and Ricardo Allen, Jamon Brown, Desmond Trufant, Julio Jones, and seeing if I can get those guys to restructure their deals and see if I can free up a little bit more money. And hopefully, you know, between freeing however many of those guys agree to that, you know, hopefully you can add in another $15 to $20 million in cap space on top of the 20 that you've already saved with the previously mentioned cuts. So that would mean that you would go in a free agency with $35 million in cap space, and therefore you would be a little bit more flexible to be able to make the moves that you need to make, like keeping Austin Hooper, like being able to address some of the holes on the defensive line. Yet at that point, you could potentially afford a bigger name splash signing, maybe not, in my eyes, Dante Fowler, maybe not Yannick Ngakoue. Again, I think Ngakoue is probably going to get tagged, but who knows? I would probably go after maybe someone like Everson Griffin or somebody like that. I'd probably bring back Claiborne. I'd probably go back and get some of those bargain shoppers that we mentioned at the top of the show, like a Michael Bennett or Shaq Lawson or a Ronald Blair. I'd probably prefer Blair over Lawson, but I'd probably try to bring back guys like Kenyon Barner and Bleedy Ray and Kamal Ishmael and Keith Smith and Sherrod Neesman on veteran minimum contracts, or find comparable players to them if they necessarily don't want to play for veteran minimum here in Atlanta, out there on the market for veteran minimum contracts. Basically, I would just wait to the second week of free agency and do a lot of bargain shopping at all three levels of the defense so that I would go into the draft without having any sort of real pressing needs. Like, I would want to go out there and sign three or four D linemen. I would want to go out there and sign two or more linebackers. I would want to go out there and get another one or two veteran cornerbacks. I would want to get a veteran safety that can sort of be my number three guy in the event that Keanu Neal isn't ready to come back, or in the event that we're going to run a lot more cover two, so that when we get into the draft, I can just basically go best player available. I can be willing to take a wide receiver in the third round because he's the best player and not feel like, oh no, we didn't get the edge because we didn't sufficiently address it in March, and now we're forced to have to basically reach on a player. And typically the one thing I will say in the Falcons' favor is they don't usually reach on guys in the first two rounds, but usually in round three, round four, you'll start to see some guys that you're like, I don't know if they should have drafted that guy, because oftentimes they'll be at a position that was clearly a hole going into the draft. And they're like, well, we got to get somebody. And we kind of missed the boat on the best talent because we went more best player available in the first two rounds. And now we just kind of have to reach on, you know, a fourth or fifth round guy in round three, or a sixth or seventh round guy in round four or something like that. And so, like, you don't want to be in that position. You just want to basically just take good players and always feel like, man, we're getting the best bang for our buck in each round of the draft. We're just getting good players, and we don't feel the need that we have to get a player at this position because there's a massive hole there. Obviously, we're going to look at a lot of positions and feel the need that we can upgrade, but I don't necessarily think that you want to go into the draft being like, we have to get an edge rusher in round one, or we have to get this position in round two or round three or whatever, because there's a massive hole there. And so, like, I would probably approach the draft with the idea that at some point I'm going to trade back, whether that's in round one or round two or round three. The goal is to sort of get, you know, potentially get three or four day three picks to fill some of these other holes on the roster, and really just, you know, come out of this draft with 9, 10, maybe even more picks to address a lot of issues on this team, because I just don't know whether or not we're going to necessarily have a strong roster. I think we're going to be thin is basically potentially. And so I want to be able to basically just hit a bunch of darts on the dartboard in the draft and really put this team, you know, add some youth to this roster. So that's how I would approach it, Corey. I hope that answers your question. So our last question is going to be from Brandon Rogers at Brand Raj on Twitter. He asks, what are the 2 to 3 worst contracts on the books in terms of cost benefit and opportunity cost for the Falcons? Also, what are the long-term solutions for getting out of them? Best point in time to cut/trade, finding a replacement, etc.? If I'm being completely honest with you, Brandon, I kind of hate this question just because, like, generally I don't really think about contracts as, like, I do think about contracts as being bad, but it's one of those things, like, once a deal is done, I'm kind of over the whole idea that it's a bad contract. It is what it is. And so it becomes at a point like, just do your job. So last year, for example, like, I thought the Ty Sambrelo contract was a bad contract, right? I thought that for what I thought Ty Sambrelo was, or what the Falcons needed at that offensive tackle position, which is basically a veteran player that can hold that seat warm until we drafted a rookie right tackle that would be the long-term answer there, that was only really worth maybe $2, $3, or at most $4 million. And then when the Falcons basically gave Ty Sambrelo like a 1 year, $6 million, or 5.75 or whatever it was, type of deal, it was like they're spending, you know, $2 to $3 million more than they need to in order to make this deal happen. And so to me, that was a bad contract. To me, they just kind of wasted $2 to $3 million because they paid Ty Sambrelo like he was a starter. And, you know, contrary to the opinion of some people out there, which always baffled me, he's not a starter. He's a backup, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with being a backup. You know, it's about doing your job. But, you know, don't pay a guy to be a starter. But like, now I'm kind of like of the mindset of like, not to sit here and be like, oh, well, you know, we have to get out of this Ty Sambrelo contract. You know, like, I guess I'm meandering a little bit, but like, to answer your question, Brandon, like, the 2 to 3 worst contracts are the contracts that we're going to get out of, you know, and it's the guys like Sambrelo, it's the guys like Bailey, it's the guys like Stocker. And it's not necessarily that I think they're bad contracts and we should get out of those contracts. Like, I don't mention those guys. Like, I try not to be the guy that's sitting here being like, we should cut this guy. Like, I don't know. It just feels icky to poop on someone's, you know, dreams of being an NFL player and being like, we should cut that guy. He should be unemployed or whatever the case may be. Like, I mentioned those guys, not because I think they should be cut. It's more of, I think they will be cut. And so that's why we have this conversation. So even though I didn't like the Sambrelo contract at the time, I'm not sitting here advocating that the Falcons cut him. I'm just sitting here saying, like, it's probably likely going to happen. And the Falcons probably also knew this at the time when they signed the deal, which is another reason why it was a bad contract. But I'm sure, Brandon, what you're probably asking me is you're trying to get more at, you know, Devontae Freeman and Desmond Trufant and Julio Jones and Jamon Brown. Like, who are the bad contracts out of those guys, out of the guys that are the highest paid players? And I don't know, like, I don't really think of it that way is where I'm getting at. It's like, I just kind of think, like, do you do your job? Okay. If you do your job, then I don't really care how much you get paid. You know, if you're not doing your job, then at this point in time in the calendar year, we can have a conversation about whether or not we should be able to get out of your contract, because February, March, and April is the time to do so. But once we get past that point in time in the calendar date out of the year, it's like, at that point in time, who cares how much you're getting paid? You got to go out there and do your job. You got to go out there and help this team win football games. And I don't care whether or not you're paid $5 million, $15 million. That's why when people sit here and criticize Desmond Trufant of his contract, I'm like, why? He does his job. Right? He does his job, you know, certainly better than a lot of other people on this team does. So why are we sitting here complaining about whether the fact that he might make, you know, a couple million dollars more than what he quote unquote should in a lot of people's eyes, which is extremely subjective and whatnot. Like, I don't know. I don't feel good answering this question. Like, what are the bad, like, do you want me to say like, oh yeah, Jamon Brown's a bad contract. The Falcons can get out of that contract if they draft a left guard in round two or three this year. And then sort of, then they'll be, have the freedom to get out of Jamon Brown's contract next year when his guaranteed money is up, and they can plug and play with that left guard in 2021 to replace Jamon Brown. Is that what you want to hear? I don't know. Like, so, like, to me, I guess my answer, and I apologize for having this cop-out answer. It's not your fault, Brandon, because you're just asking questions. So I don't want to feel like I'm like, well, don't ever ask me these terrible questions. I'm just sitting here like, my approach to it is just kind of like the 2 to 3 worst contracts, or the 2 to 3 contracts the Falcons are going to get out of right now. I don't really care about guys that they can't get out of their contracts right now. Like, they can't really get out of Jamon Brown's contract. So who cares if it's a bad contract? Right. When you can get out of the contract potentially next year, then we can have the conversation about getting out of the contract. When you can get out of Julio Jones's contract in 3 years, then we can have the conversation about getting out of his contract. And again, I'm not suggesting, I know people are going to read into that, but like, you think Julio Jones is a bad contract. I'm saying from a certain point of view, you can certainly make the argument that Julio Jones has a bad contract. You make the argument that anybody's a bad contract. Matt Ryan's got a bad contract. Everybody's got a bad contract. It's kind of the nature of the beast. That's part of the reason why I don't feel great answering this question. So I, you know, I hate dancing around the question. I hate sort of, you know, getting on my high horse and be like, this is, I don't like this question, because it's not your fault that you asked the question. You're just looking for a simple answer, and I'm being the jerk that's not answering the question. But I don't know. Like, it just, it is what it is. Like, guy's contract, it is what it is. So yeah, I mean, I apologize for not answering your question, Brandon, but like, I don't know. It just, that question kind of just rubbed me the wrong way. I apologize, Brandon. Yeah, I don't know, man. All right, I'm sorry. Well, if you want to be like Brandon, send in your questions for me to shoot it down. You can do so via Twitter at Lockdown Falcons, via Facebook at Lockdown Falcons, or via email at lockdownfalcons@mail.com. Appreciate everybody for sending in their questions. I think we had an email question that I didn't get to either. So we'll get to those at some point this week. Sorry, guys, for not getting to it, but we got stuff to talk about. At some point, the compensatory picks are going to come out, and the Falcons won't get one. And we'll deal with that. We'll talk about that at some point this week. Probably we'll get you guys geared up for the combine and whatnot. And then we will answer those email questions that people sent in that I wasn't able to answer on today's episode. So we'll get there. All right, guys. Appreciate it. Until next time.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA approved. Blah, blah, blah. Blue Chew is prescribed online. They're made in USA, and since Blue Chew, blah, blah, blah. Why can't I talk today? Right now, you can take advantage of this special offer by vote. Look, oh my God, I'm having a stroke. My God. Right now, take advantage of this special offer by visiting BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free